From KCRW, I'm Kim Masters, and this is The Business. Marcel Duchesne with Shoes On became a thing more than 10 years ago when a short film about the sweet but lonely one-inch talking shell went viral.
Guess what I use as a beanbag chair? A raisin.
Now, Marcel, brought to life through stop-motion animation, is the subject of his own movie. Director Dean Fleischer-Camp says he could take an improvisational approach to making the film because actress Jenny Slate is so completely at home doing the voice of Marcel.
That production model would not have been possible with another actor or performer because Jenny is able to stay in character as Marcel basically all the time. And that allowed us to do things that you wouldn't be able to do in a normal voiceover recording setup.
Slate and Fleischer-Camp share how they finally turned a short film that was produced in a couple of days into a full-length feature with just about 100% rating on Rotten Tomatoes. But first we banter. Stick around. It's The Business from KCRW. I am joined by my partner in banter, Matt Bellany. Hello, Matt.
Hi there.
So we're just going to talk ever so briefly about the Emmys because it's the same damn thing every year. It's like, wait, my show that I liked or my actor was overlooked and this was nominated. And some of these nominations, seriously, you are like, that show is still on. And haven't we awarded it and nominated it enough? And then there are some really good nominations and you're like, oh yes, yes, that one is good. I like that. What seems to be the source of frustration year after year is, and it's, you know, it's a problem that's gotten worse with the expanding number of shows, which may have hit their peak and already started not to expand anymore, but you can't watch everything. You don't want to watch everything. And people in this little community, they talk amongst themselves. They watch the same shows seemingly, and they vote like sometimes to a crazy degree for the one that they love, nominating a whole category worth of actors from one show, regardless. And it just feels like herd mentality and groupthink.
Absolutely. And this has been my pet peeve for years. There should be some rule that you have to sit these Academy members down and make them watch at least 20, 30 shows because they seem to watch the same 10 shows and keep nominating them. It's just, it's a feat. Now, that said, it's nice that shows like Squid Game and Abbott Elementary and Only Murders in the Building, that these shows can break through and get into the club. But once you are in the club, it just feels like you're getting nominated. The fact that 5 of the 7 nominees in supporting actress in a limited series are from The White Lotus is unbelievable. Yes. Like, I like The White Lotus. It was great.
I love The White Lotus.
Throw some love around. I mean, there's so much great TV out there and there's so many snubs. And when you're getting all these people getting out, the Killing Eve nominations for Jodie Comer and Sandra Oh, I was shocked that show is still on. And, you know, just once people start watching these shows, it just seems like that's all they vote for is these same shows, despite all the campaigning and everybody trying to get people to check out these new shows. It's so difficult to break in.
Yes. Oddly, Yellowstone, very, very popular show, got nothing. I will note they just hired a publicist who was an awards publicist. So I guess they...
Yeah, they did a real campaign because the SAG Awards finally noticed Yellowstone, yet the Emmys still pretending that the biggest phenomenon in TV doesn't exist.
And they upped the game with, I'm saying, with another awards specialist hire that they just did. So they're not giving up quite yet. Now, having talked about that, let's talk about Hulu. HBO led in nominations with a lot of strong programming. Netflix fell back a bit, you know, and you do wonder whether Ted Sarandos, who is the volume strategy guy now, but spent lots of money and effort trying to get awards before that, is going to be okay with that. They still had a strong turnout. But Hulu, which is the least blessed in terms of, you know, backing, Hulu seems to have done really remarkably well and is strangely situated right now as it is partly owned by Disney and partly by Comcast. But as the deal was set up some time ago when Disney bought Fox, Disney has the right to acquire Hulu in 2024. The terms don't necessarily favor Hulu right now or in the future because the price is not a set number. It's going to be determined.
Well, there's a floor, but there's no ceiling, meaning the more investment Disney makes in Hulu and the more valuable it becomes before 2024, the more it's going to cost Disney to buy it outright. And that has been the source of a lot of internal discussion at Disney because it's a weird incentive. You know, Hulu doesn't exist outside the U.S. If you go to Disney Plus in Europe or many countries, you'll see Pam and Tommy and Dropout and some of these other more adult shows. It's in the U.S. where there's this brand Hulu that exists. And there are 40-something million subscribers, which is not nothing. And Disney is actually getting a very high revenue per user from those Hulu subscribers. So there's weird incentives here because the obvious thing to do would be to just fold Hulu under the Disney Plus banner in the U.S. when it is bought from Comcast. But do those subscribers come over to Disney Plus? Do they not? Do you have to do something like make it a tile on Disney Plus and do an upcharge because people are used to spending so much less on Disney Plus than they would on Hulu? It's a really complicated problem for Disney, and nobody really knows what they're going to do.
Yeah, I mean, Hulu was born as a collaboration among studios as a stab at getting into streaming and confronting Netflix. But time has not favored it as a collaboration among the studios. Everybody's got their own thing. Nonetheless, they came up with more than 50 Emmy nominations. And they have stuff like, as you said, Pam and Tommy and The Dropout, Only Murders in the Building, Dope Sick. They've been doing really, really strong work that way. And I think it's got value, even if Disney doesn't want to buy it.
Yeah, and I think that's a result of the Disney content machine now fueling Hulu, because for many years, Hulu was buying shows from outside providers and they, you know, were getting some from their partners. But Disney, since it bought Fox, has really focused on stocking that Hulu pond. And if you look at something like The Dropout, that is from Searchlight Television, which is the former Fox Searchlight that Disney acquired. And this is its first TV show. And they got that onto Hulu. And it's a huge hit, and it's got Emmy nominations now. And the other divisions of Disney are fueling Hulu, 20th Television being the biggest. That has been great for Hulu as a platform, but it doesn't solve the business problem of Hulu, which is what is this service going forward?
Yeah, I will admit I'm still like thrown when I see that Searchlight Television thing come up. I'm used to thinking of Searchlight as like Little Miss Sunshine in movies, but this is the world we're in. Thank you, Matt.
Thank you.
That's Matt Bellany, a founding partner of Puck News. In a world of cinematic tentpole events, there lives a shell named Marcel. Debuting as a 2010 web short, Marcel the Shell with Shoes On featured a stop-motion, animated, one-inch-tall, talking shell who indeed wears shoes. The 3-minute video, currently sitting at 32 million views on YouTube, was a viral hit. It spawned a couple of web sequels and children's books, but it was years before the dream of a feature-length film could be realized. The original short video opens as director Dean Fleischer Camp, who remains off-camera, asks the title character, voiced by Jenny Slate, to introduce himself.
My name is Marcel. Not the first time I've done that. My name is Marcel, and I'm partially a shell, as you can see on my body, but I also have shoes and a face, so I like that about myself, and I like myself, and I have a lot of other great qualities as well.
According to Slate, that stumble was an actual misread, but it was charming enough to open the short and introduce Marcel to the world. Fleischer Camp and Slate have long sought to bring Marcel to the big screen, but only under the right circumstances. The pair spent the past decade developing the feature before teaming up with nonprofit CineReach to fund the picture. So we're going to get to the bottom of this mystery because I've been reading a lot about Marcel's background. I read that it came from an overcrowded party or a voice that you were doing around the house, Jenny. So which one is it, you guys? Come clean.
Well, actually, it's neither. Yeah,
yeah, that's right? True.
Dean and I were at a wedding. We were at our friend Gabe Liedman's brother's wedding. Mm-hmm. And we were sharing our hotel room with, I want to say, three other people. But Dean, did you, I feel like you like just recently really looked into that. Did you?
I did, because a fact checker from The New Yorker was like, give me the deeds. Where, uh-huh. What hotel? And so I had to look up that it was.
So how many people were in there?
I think it was like four. Well, no, I think it was six total. I think it's what we were doing.
Yeah, so that's a lot. Over the course of that weekend and being in close quarters, I guess I just started talking in this little voice that I had never done before. And that's pretty incredible. Like, as a comedian who was trying to, you know, like, do every voice I possibly could all the time, it was very exciting to find out that there was one that I had not yet done.
But just saying stuff, like, to express how scrunched she felt, saying things like, well, you can do it, Jaren.
Yeah, like saying things like, I feel like someone's going to step on my head. And you know, like, stuff like that. Like, you guys really need to tidy up. And it was a combination of being fussy and feeling squished, and it went into that.
And then when we got home, I realized that I had agreed to make a video for a friend's stand-up comedy show. And it was, like, a couple days away, and I was like, oh God. And so very quickly was like, Jenny, can I interview you in that voice? And with the idea that I would, like, make a little character around, based around the voice in a little short film. I think we recorded twice, Jenny. This is where I get tripped up. I think we recorded a little bit. Then I think I went out and, like, bought a bunch of craft store supplies, and just knowing, okay, I'm going to throw these together in some combination to make a character, like, something will stick. And I, you know, got to work and created a bunch of, like, kind of tiny little goblin terrible versions of Marcel until I finally landed on the design that we have, which I think he's very handsome.
I do too.
And I remember Jenny came home after I had sort of crafted him from these objects, and I had put him on the kitchen table at the time. And I remember, I think I was sitting on the balcony, Jenny, but I don't know what your memory is. I remember hearing Jenny from inside go, oh, this is him.
Yeah, that's totally what I remember too. And like, there he was, and it was so obviously him. And then you're right, Dean. I mean, from what I remember, that then you interviewed me again, and that's like when I knew what I looked like. And I think I was so touched by Marcel's unique handsomeness and wanted to say exactly, you know, what I looked like as him or whatever, what he looked like. And I love how straightforward he was from the start, because he just was describing himself in such basic terms, because I had just seen him for the first time. And that's not something, you know, you get. Like, we all know how we in our own bodies look, or how we think we look at least. And a lot of us have been, like, working a long time to try to describe that. But for Marcel, I saw him one time and I saw it and they said it. And I love how he looks. I love how Dean made him.
And then I remember, because I found it recently, the original audio clip where you said his name for the first time, where I was interviewing you. And I was like, what's your name? I was, like, kind of pestering you to come up with a name, I think, but within, you know, in character. And Jenny was like, oh, you want to know my name? My name is Marcel. And then I was like, your name's Marcel and you're also a shell? Is that a coincidence? And then you went on that great intro that was like, my name is Marcia. Oh, I'm sorry. That's not the first time I've done that.
Oh, right. You bobble it.
I think that was a genuine bobble. I don't think that was
scripted. It's a genuine bobble. No, not scripted.
And you went with it and made it into a moment of adorableness.
It's a fumble that she recovered.
Yes, nicely. Very nicely. So, I mean, did it get to the point where, I don't know, Dean was saying, do more, give me more to work with on this journey of making Marcel shorts? Or did you just find it pleasurable to keep doing more?
You know, there are always long periods of time in between where maybe Dean and I would think of a Marcel joke or have a conversation, but it always felt like we really waited quite a while until it really felt right to make another one. And I really like that, because I do think we could have sort of blown it out, you know, and just done a lot. But instead, every time we would make a new short, it would build a little bit more, like what he was capable of as a character. Yeah, like by the third one, he's really capable of, like, having a full past, even though we don't know what it is. You know, he's more than just, like, a sort of talking bumper sticker. Like, he's so much more than that. And I think in the interviews, there's a lot that Dean couldn't use just because it's just random nothing of me just speaking as that character. But
yeah, I was basically going to say the same thing. My memory was always, it was the opposite of being like, give me more. It was like, we have so much that isn't making its way into these tiny little shorts, which
and
maybe is
still
why
so much.
A feature scene.
There's much that didn't make it in. Like, I will always grieve this one moment of Marcel describing how a storm is the greatest theater.
Oh, yeah.
And it just doesn't go. It just didn't go anywhere. And, you know,
like, do you want to share it with us now if it's a moment?
It was like Marcel saying, like, the swing and braying of the trees. Yeah. You know, the whoosh of the wind. Like all of the, and he starts it by saying like, don't you think that's a storm is like the greatest theater? Like he says it like it's a question and the performance.
You know what I remembered recently, Jenny, or actually found on a hard drive, is the riff that got cut about film noir and how Marcel hates film noir.
I wish that we could be watching something that was like about detectives.
Like what kind of thing?
Just nothing in a noir.
No, not a noir.
There's never any hopeful characters. They're all like, let me tell you something, sister. That's not the way this town works. They're always like, oh, I'll put out a pot of coffee for like every single situation. It's like, maybe you guys shouldn't get all hopped up on stuff if you already did a murder or whatever.
Well, that feels so right for the business. That feels right for our show.
Marcel, a lot of things Marcel doesn't like is because I happen to not like them very much either.
The truth comes out.
Yeah, like any of the rare times in the film where he's just griping, it's that's just Dean kind of letting audio roll.
Let me vent. So you had tons of material, but you sort of moderated and you, I guess, met with studios because, of course, these things became viral. Yet you kind of, you know, the situation with the studios, you seem to full out resist commercializing too much with Marcel. Is that fair?
I think that we, because of that experience of having, you know, really gotten to know him over having made a few shorts, that whenever we had a meeting... And look, studios are studios. They're really great at making the type of movies that they make. And they were pitching us on introducing Marcel to that kind of environment. But I always felt, and I think Jenny felt, that the things that we loved about Marcel weren't necessarily the things that made him a great fit for, you know, a tentpole franchise. Most of our movie actually doesn't even comment or emphasize on the fact that he's a talking snail shell. And what we really loved about him was that he was a real individual and he had depth and complexity. And I wanted to honor that and make a documentary portrait that treated its subject with dignity. Sorry, to answer your question, it's not that like we're totally against like studio stuff or doing something broadly appealing. It's just that it took a while for us to find the right partners to do that, like in a way that was really holistic to what we had made and what and how we like to work.
Yeah, there are so many different ways to be in a movie and make a movie. And like, I'm in like a lot of the Illumination movies and I really like them. I like working there and hope to keep working there. But for this one, it's sort of like, it's like discovering a rare creature and actually just trying to figure out what environment to put them in so that you can like house them properly. And, you know, I'm really glad that we did it this way because also I'm really impatient. And a lot of times when I feel my own self-worth kind of getting low, I'm like, prove it now that I'm, you know, that I'm worth it or whatever. And this was totally a different pace of like engaging in something that really mattered and that felt worthwhile over and over and over again. And also, especially for me, like stepping away for large portions and letting Dean do his thing. And I think the process that we had with the movie, because it was an independent film and because Dean invented so much of the filmmaking process, I'd, you know, never been in a movie like that before or, you know, contributed to writing one like that. But I think we just anticipated that we wanted something special out of the process and we hadn't seen it yet. And so we took the risk to try to create that for ourselves.
I mean, to be clear, there was never a specific project offer, like, and then a fight because no, Marcel can't be that.
No.
But it was just a conversation that didn't go in the right direction and didn't happen.
For sure.
Eventually, though, you do manage to get to this place. I read that there was CineReach, which came up with the money. How did that connection happen?
Nick Paley, our co-writer, and Liz Holm, our wonderful producer, were kind of the only two people on the project at that point. And Liz had really helped us set up a round of pitches with various potential financiers. And then the very last one was this place, CineReach, that actually Nick had a friend, Andrew Goldman, who was working there at the time as a producer. And so we met with them, and they're really a rare kind of special gem in the landscape of indie film financing. They really were seeing, I think, in us filmmakers that they trusted They were not merely interested in Marcel as a potential, you know, merchandising windfall or whatever maybe a studio would see. They believed in the story we wanted to tell and in us as its storytellers.
Coming up after the break, director Dean Fleischer Camp explains why he calls Marcel stop motion animation inherently wonky, yet beautiful. You're listening to The Business from KCRW.
Introducing the KCRW donation car, designed to be recycled. This first-of-its-kind vehicle will save you time, space, and hassle by disappearing. Enjoy the luxury and comfort of turning your underused car into a donation worth hundreds, even thousands of dollars. The KCRW donation car, already in your garage, driveway, or on cinder blocks outside your house. Act now at kcrw.com/cars.
This is The Business, and I'm Kim Masters. Marcel the Shell with Shoes On begins with a documentary filmmaker, a fictionalized version of director Dean Fleischer Camp, encountering a small, talking shell with a big heart living in the suburban house that he's rented. Marcel lives with his grandma, Nana Connie, voiced by Isabella Rossellini, but he misses his extended family, which vanished mysteriously after the previous human couple that occupied the home split up and moved out. When the filmmaker offers to help Marcel try to find his family, Nana Connie encourages him to undertake the search, even if it means taking risks.
Sometimes I find my mind wandering, thinking, what would my family think? Do you think they could be out there?
Marcello, let's forget about being afraid. Just take the adventure.
Okay, let's do it.
It took Fleischer Camp and Slate a number of years and a number of meetings to find the right home for Marcel the movie. I'm wondering, when you did your pitches, did you guys bring little Marcels to... We've heard these stories about people making, you know, elaborate props or little giveaways. Uh-huh. Do people have Marcels all over their desks somewhere in the indie film world?
No, because at the time there was only one Marcel, and he was one of a kind until we got into like actual pre-production on the feature and were able to have the means to 3D scan him and start working with fabricators to make multiples.
Were the execs all like, Jenny, do Marcel? Did you manage to get through the meetings without too much of that?
I don't mind speaking as Marcel. And I also feel like you've got to do it. You know, you have to like show the people that you can do it.
I hear you can do it for hours on end. I hear you don't get tired doing it, which I find amazing.
I like it. Yeah. I mean, it is like I've described it like at the end of our long recording days when we started to actually make the movie, I would just like really want to be actually completely quiet. You know, like just talking so much. And the other thing is that I think like in character as Marcel, it's like a beautiful workout to get to the truth. I would feel rather exercised.
Yeah.
I will also say that the way that we wrote this movie was sort of like a really unique mix of a lot of kind of traditional writing and then a lot of Jenny and Isabella, especially improvising, and all those things were sort of in the name of making it sound authentic, but also kind of getting the most out of this character. But that production model would not talk about finding a financier who had faith, who had faith in us. That production model would not have been possible with another actor or performer because Jenny is able to stay in character as Marcel basically all the time. And that allowed us to do things that you wouldn't be able to do in a normal kind of, you know, voiceover recording setup. Like, I literally heard Jenny answer the phone by accident in character when her sister was calling once. and that ability to kind of continue on and stay, not just doing the voice, but also doing, you know, in his mindset, mm-hmm. his persona, really allowed us to, I guess I would call it like give ourselves documentary constraints as much as possible.
Well, I was thinking, you know, props to CineReach, because I'm guessing that you just are like, we're going to improvise parts of this, like maybe a whole lot of it.
And yeah.
It's going to be good. Trust us. It'll be fine.
Yeah.
Speaking of improvisation, I think, Dean, you improvised the initial stop motion shorts, because you were not exactly a stop motion animator. And you kept part of that charm. I was going to say part of the charm was the somewhat rudimentary nature. And I did read where you were telling people, don't make it look too good, because you wanted to keep that.
Yeah. Well, I would not consider myself a stop motion animator. Although, yeah, I did. You're right. I did those shorts. And that was part of the charm of those shorts, was how crudely they were animated. But there's a huge difference between making a short and making a feature. And so we brought on Kirsten Lepore, who is an incredible animation. I would call her a virtuoso. And we actually had met at Sundance 10 years ago when we had the shorts there, because she had a short called Bottle. Yeah, that was top of mind during a lot of our conversations, was, well, how do we sort of embrace the inherent wonkiness of stop motion, which I think is such a beautiful and really expressively emotional part of what makes Marcel great. And then how do we also, you know, give him more articulation and allow him to do things that I wouldn't have been able to animate and he wasn't able to do in the shorts, because he was literally super glued together and had no joints. And so, yeah, a lot of thought and care went into how do we preserve the charm while also scaling it up and having a bigger budget and working with real trained animators.
Now, the Leslie Stahl of it all, she comes and she appears on the film, but were they leery about having her act too much, or, you know, interact with Marcel too much, or anything that might, I don't know, somehow feel it was detracting from the 60 Minutes serious journalist image? Or how did that go?
I don't think so. Did you get any of that, Dean? Oh, sorry, you go ahead.
No, I agree with you. I don't think so. I think we had the film, at least the animatic and the audio play, were completed before Leslie, with, like, I don't know, probably me doing Leslie Stahl's voice. So they were aware of how we were depicting them before we went out to them. And
I'm sure of that. I mean, I'm just wondering, did you have to call them and go, well, there's this thing called Marcel the Shell?
I think that Liz Holm, who did that. Liz did everything for us, because she knew Sherry Finkelstein, who appears in the film as well, and brought the project to Sherry. Yeah, she's a real producer, and Sherry brought it to Leslie. And, you know, they arrived with their real 60 Minutes crew. And she interviewed Marcel. I mean, we told her, you know, like, what questions to ask. But then, you know, she just did the interview. And I sat on the floor, and she looked down sort of that, like, she could have a proper eye line. And I've thought about this a lot, that, like, you know, it can be risky to ask someone who's not an improviser to improvise with you, but she is an interviewer. I mean, she knows to sometimes follow something interesting. And I think you really see that. Yeah, like, she is a really good interviewer and was a real professional. And it made me feel very, very special.
Well, let me just ask you this. You've got 100% on Rotten Tomatoes. So enough leftover footage. What are the plans for Marcel? Is Marcel going to live on? Because I've become quite attached to him.
I don't know. It would be nice if he did. You know,
I hope it always feels the same to me.
You go, Dean, and then I'll go.
I was just going to say, I hope that people go see the film in theaters right now. Or if you live in New York and LA, and then July 15th, it's nationwide, because we would love to make another thing. But it depends on if there's a market out there for it, I guess. And if people are willing to give us money.
Beautifully put. Beautifully put. Beautifully put, Dean. It just a tinge of guilt on the audience. You know, if you want more, you got to get out there.
This is the
shaming episode. Marcel the Shell stars Jenny Slate and was directed by Dean Fleischer-Camp. Thank you both so much for joining us.
Thank you for having us.
And that's The Business. Joshua Farnham produced and edited today's program, with help this week from Matt Schwartz and Paul Smith, who mixed the show. You can stream The Business, as well as other great KCRW podcasts, on the KCRW app. I'm Kim Masters. We'll see you next week on The Business.